We begin things by getting on the telephone line and welcoming into the program our friend, writer, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
Hey, what's up, Mr. Kimball?
Well, just getting through a rainy Tuesday around here as we've yet to piece together more than about two or three days of really good weather. But yeah, we'll be strong. We'll suck it up.
And nautical weather is good for the soul.
It is. It is. I like it on occasion. Not every day, but that's all right. We want to talk today, though, about, I know, one of your favorites, a favorite of a lot of people, and that is the Sherlock Holmes stories that you believe every bit as relevant today as they were when first published.
Captivated you as a boy, too.
Yes, indeed.
Correctly, yes.
They did.
And I do think that they are as relevant today as ever, but maybe not for the reason that people tend to read them. We look at them often as these whodunits, and if you do reread them as an adult, and I know you read them primarily as a kid, that they have their lasting value, really, for reasons that have nothing to do with mystery. And in fact, a lot of the stories, the mystery is kind of threadbare. It's almost beside the point. It is the engine for the plot. But that's not really what we keep coming back to. What we keep coming back to with these stories, what makes these 56 stories and four novels art, I would say, is that they detail a relationship as well as any work of art in literature. And it just happens to be a friendship between two guys.
And you think that's a rare thing because you view the current times we live in as what you call a friendless age. What do you mean by that?
I think people are rubbish at being friends. I don't think many people have friends anymore. You've heard the expression, of course, that a person is lucky to have one real friend in life. And I would say that most people do not have a single real friend in life. They have what they call their friends. But oftentimes, I almost look at it as like you're in the deep end of the pool. And what your goal is in life for a lot of people is to get out of the deep end of the pool. And what that means is you find someone to be with that you're going to have a family with, and then you're off on your own private island, right? You're not in that deep end. You can look over there and think, oh, goodness, I'm so glad I'm not swimming amongst all the crazies in that pool with the swimmies on and everything. And then your island becomes your life. You go to work, you come home, you're with your tribe on the island, your spouse, your kids, and I think that's it. Now, I know people, sometimes I've known them for 20 or 25 years, and I've come to realize that they're not my friends. They're people that might say that they are my friends, and I think this is pretty typical because people want to think that they have friends, but they're not really people who would be there or prioritize being there for someone else beyond their tribe, and their relationships outside of that family unit often consist of, hey, what do you think about the Patriots' chances in the Super Bowl this year? That kind of thing. And it doesn't go much beyond that, because to be somebody's friend, it's an active, ongoing, dogged concern that requires openness, requires vulnerability. It requires the lost art of listening to somebody rather than just waiting for our turn to speak. And I think when you're out of the pool and you're on your own private island and you have your virtual friendships of social media, we see that friendship is just dwindling more and more and more and more. And that's also helping people become more unhappy, more unwell, more depressed. And it's an art to be a friend. It's not a very common commodity.
So are you saying that you can't be a friend if you have that tribe, that island of family?
No, I'm not saying that it automatically precludes that. Like, you'd have to make a choice of, well, do I want to be a friend or do I want to have my spouse? I think it requires, though, a determination, an active determination to be a person for others. It's so easy now, especially when we say we're so busy, to put the time in at work, come home, and that's just going to be it. And that's not a way to be a friend. A friend is something that always requires an active pursuit. And I look at it this way, that there are two kinds of non-evil people in the world, really. There are what I call trench people, and there are what I call convalescent people. And a convalescent person is someone who will oh, maybe pick up the phone and call you after a bad divorce, send a Starbucks gift card or something like that. A trench person is someone who's going to face anything that you might ever go through by your side and risk being bayoneted in the process. I don't know that I've ever met a trench person, but I do know that in these stories, Watson is a trench person, and he is someone who is married a couple times. He has one wife die, and yet he remains with Holmes, the true personification of a friend slash trench person.
But to do that, Watson has to also give up a lot of himself, it seems.
What would you say that he gives up?
Well, you mentioned he doesn't have the family, that Holmes in many ways becomes, his work wife in a sense.
Watson's married a couple times in the stories, and he'll go a while without seeing Holmes. And he has his family life. Watson is actually even a bit of a player, too, if you go through the stories. He's always like, oh, hey, so we just hooked you up with, like, finding who molested you in your home. Maybe now you want to stretch that a bit further. He's always up to something, that Watson. But I think what Watson gets is a larger portion of himself than he would have otherwise had. What an artist does and what a friend does, and I think, again, there's an artistry to friendship, is they give someone back to themselves, more themselves than they were on their own. They don't so much as add elements to that person as bring out things that are in them that are dormant, that are not going to come out without that other influence, without that cause, that reason to be vulnerable. And I think Watson, he comes into these stories, he's a broken man. He has watched his comrades get massacred in war. Mm-hmm. He is physically disabled. You wouldn't know it because Holmes inspires him to get out there and tend to when the game is afoot. He is this person who is drinking too much when the stories start, and he meets this guy who really just can't afford the rent, and Watson can't afford the rent either. Watson's in his early 30s when these stories start. He's not 21, and he finds succor with this man. He finds inspiration, and Holmes helps Watson unlock his mind. One of the biggest untruths about all of literature is that Watson is a dolt. Watson is far smarter than people we encounter in our lives. Now, he's not a genius like Holmes is, but he's a really bright guy, and he is looking for this sinister to bring this out in him, and he finds it. And Holmes gets what he needs from Watson. It's very much the clownfish and the sea anemone. It's a very symbiotic relationship.
So it's not, from your perspective, any kind of a one-sided relationship, that Watson is indeed getting the things he needs from Holmes.
Well, Holmes is getting what he needs from Watson as well. And they share one of the crucial tenets of any true friendship, and that's rapport. We know when we have rapport. Like you and I, if we go to the Dunkin' Donuts, we have rapport. There's a natural give and take to conversation. One person says something funny. You know, having said that, the other person's going to laugh. They share that. And from rapport, we get that kind of connection. And Holmes becomes more of a human person. And again, he has that inside himself. But he could be scientific. He could be data-driven. He could be clinical. And yet, he's such a human character. We see his love for children oftentimes in these stories, but Watson helps bring that out on a different level. And they have this true friendship. And you just don't see that a lot. And that's really what these 60 works become. They become a study in friendship, like Monet, study in painting. I'm going to do these water lilies, all these different angles. That is what this canon of Holmes and Watson becomes.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Are the things that drew you to those stories when you were younger the same things that give you that sense of connection to Holmes today?
Interestingly, I didn't read them when I was younger.
Oh, you didn't?
And I found it fascinating that you read them as a kid. And then when I thought about that, I thought, okay, this probably is like youthful reading for people. I understood Horatio Hornblower. You had mentioned that. Mm. Things that I read were Jack London. I didn't really read these. I read mysteries like The Three Investigators, but I came to them at different times in adulthood, not being able to sleep. They were good for that because not that they put you to bed, but you like hanging out in 221B. That's the hallmark of so much art. Put people together who hang out with each other well, and we will feel comfort in joining their company. You might think that Star Wars is all about, ooh, it's Darth Vader and lightsabers and stormtroopers. No, it's really people hanging out. That's why the first one works so well and hooks you. It's very much 221B. So that was a comfort to me. The jokes between these two men that become the jokes that are in jokes that you're in on. I love that. I like that they enjoyed some of the simple pleasures in life for all of the skullduggery that was dealt with. A cup of coffee. Watson likes his ale. And then I read them at other points in life when I was lonely. I read them now. I'm rereading them when I feel like almost friendless, and they become companions to me. So they've been there at different times in my life and in different ways. And I envision a future, a happier future, where one of my great joys will be late at night. Hopefully the spouse will be down the hall asleep. Before I join her in bed, I'll be reading something like The Blue Carbuncle and having a decaffeinated coffee. And that just is something that I look forward to as a kind of utopia, really, a day in, day out pleasure that is something that's really one of my aims in life.
Well, and also there's the fact that, as you mentioned in our communication, that you have some things in common with Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I do. And I become more aware of them all the time. For instance, when they meet, Watson thinks that Sherlock Holmes is incredibly arrogant. And Sherlock Holmes is just saying what he knows himself to be. And I don't like to be in the situation where I have to pretend with some false modesty that, oh, yes, I don't know that much about that many things, or, oh, no, I only write to this level. I feel like if something's true, you have every right to say it. You don't do like the giant fist bump and ride your stick down the ice like you're Tiger Williams or something. But that's something that I always understood with. If it's true, my belief is that you can say it. And also, Holmes has a unique job. No one else has his job. And no one else has my job. And I experience this on dating sites when people be like, what kind of thing do you write about? Can you imagine how difficult it is to answer that question if you're me? Or they just break it down to fiction or nonfiction. And I can't say, look, I'm the leading expert on this, 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 and this, and this, and this. And I write fiction, I do radio, I do office, because people just won't believe me. But Lestrade and all of those people at first, they didn't believe what Holmes was. He's a consulting detective. And when I try to give someone an idea of what I am, I'm not a journalist. The journalist shows up with a notebook and writes down what people say. I'm not a freelancer, really, because a freelancer doesn't have any knowledge about a subject going into an assignment, and you basically become a de facto journalist. I am someone with a unique set of ranges of expertise who writes fiction better than other people, too. And so I just don't have the title. Holmes, at least, had consulting detective. But I identify with that. And he had no one else in his field. He was in college. He'd stopped going to class, like I did, because he felt his professors had nothing to teach him. So he was doing all sorts of weird experiments, Bunsen burners and acids, trying to isolate blood from everything else so you could tell it in a stain pattern. And he found his own way. Everything he learned, he taught himself. And everything that I've learned, everything that I know, is something that I've gone out and informed myself about. I never learned that at university or anything, and Holmes didn't learn what he learned at university either.
Before we let you go, Colin, let's get your thoughts on Game 7 tomorrow night. Do the Bruins take care of business at home and wrap up the cup?
I should be asking you, because you are the master predictor. That was impressive the other day when I asked you if you were confident, and you put it squarely on Rask. And I thought that they were going to need Rask and a lot more. And I didn't feel that they got a lot more. I know the score didn't look that way, but I thought they were like they were in tar, skating in tar for a lot of that game, and Rask won them that game. You would not really like to see a Game 7 deflating kind of loss. And I think for St. Louis, that was their victory waiting to happen. They overextended themselves, Brett Hall, from everyone on down. They were thinking that that was going to be their Stanley Cup party, and I think it's going to be difficult for them to rebound from that deflation. So I'll put it at 80%.
That's a pretty solid level of confidence right there. I like that going into Game 7 tomorrow night. Colin Fleming, check out his work at colinflemminglit.com. And, of course, he joins us every Tuesday afternoon. Colin, we thank you as always, and we'll check in again next week.
All right. Thank you.
Colin Fleming here on Downtown.